So 20 years ago, when I got into coaching, mental performance coaching, that was like the big thing in sports. Today, it's mental health. Yet I know these are not separate things. They're interwoven. And so it's one of the reasons I'm a huge fan of Lisa Mitzel, who was on our last episode and is back this week to talk with us about mental health. And particularly, as Nate starts the conversation this week, our conversation is focused on what is our role as coaches? Because I think we can all feel a little overwhelmed. Some of us in some sports, we have teams of 40 to 60 athletes, and we might even struggle as it is just to learn all their names, much less keep up with their mental state. The great news is everything Lisa shares today is very doable for us as coaches and parents. In fact, at the end of today's episode, she's going to share about her equipment, which I am really excited about and looking forward to getting some myself. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm your host, JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Nate Sanderson. The mission of this podcast is to help you become a better leader and build a better culture. In addition to this podcast, I'm the founder of TOC, which provides one-on-one coaching and consulting for leaders. Learn more about us at tocculture.com. This episode is brought to you by the TOC newsletter. Every Thursday, our newsletter includes two things you don't want to miss out on. Firstly, the notes to that week's podcast episode. Whether you're listening while driving the car, out for a run, or doing the dishes, we don't want you to miss the biggest takeaways from each episode. Secondly, each newsletter is a short article from myself or Nate on leadership and culture. These articles are designed to inspire, encourage, and provide practical insights into leadership and culture building. Our content is a perfect fit for anyone who wants to stay up to date with the latest trends and insights in culture building. You can subscribe to the newsletter at tocculture.com or by clicking on the link in the details of each episode.
Well, I want to shift gears here for just a second and kind of come back to the topic of mental health. I think that, as we've mentioned, the awareness of that, particularly since the pandemic, I mean, that was kind of this, you know, massive moment where everybody started thinking, what effect is this going to have on our students and on our kids and, shoot, as our adults, you know, that are confined to their homes for a while. So there's this greater awareness around just the need and the understanding that there's more and more of an obstacle or battle or challenge here, maybe than what we used to talk about even 5 years ago. But I think a lot of coaches might sit back and wonder, okay, I'm aware. I'm trying to be more aware of where my athletes are at in terms of their mental health. But what's my role in that? In other words, how attuned do I need to be to each individual and their levels of anxiety and things like that? And I've got 40 guys on my roster. I've got 15 basketball players. I've got 100 football players. What's the role of the coach, you know, in that sort of arena?
The role of the coach to me is to constantly create connections, whether it's connections with themselves and the thought and the strategy, or it's connections with the team. Whether you're a young kid, a teenager, or a college age athlete, all of these kids need our guidance. They need us to help give them options. Okay, here are some options, right? So that they can then make the choice and make the connections in their mind. They can make the connections with each other. Okay, this is what we're going to do. All right, I want to see you two guys play off of each other, and you go there and you go there. If we don't guide them at all, then they're struggling to figure things out on their own. So it's, to me, it's giving them options, whether, again, that's game strategy, mental strategies, mental health suggestions, right? Is helping them to make those mental connections by giving them options, by structuring different exercises, whether that's a team talk, whether it's a team bonding activity. There's a doctor, Lisa Damore, and she is just, I have grown to really, really appreciate her, and I follow her on social media. I haven't gotten her book yet, but I want to. She wrote a book called The Emotional Lives of Teens. And she talks about, especially from the COVID experience, is that teenagers need for their healthy development. And of course, this goes up into college age, right? For their healthy development, they need to have social connection and they need to feel independent. They need to be developing themselves independently. And so when we talk about what is the coach's role, okay, independently, how am I helping this student athlete develop their mind, their decision-making, their sense of leadership, even if it's just leading themselves, right? How am I help? The coach's role is how am I helping this student athlete create meaningful connections with their teammates? It's not just that, you know, you both saw the same movie, right? Or that you both went to the same party or you're both taking the same class. It's how can we create more meaning? And, you know, whether that's through community service, whether that's through sharing deep experiences. When I went on my recruiting trip to the University of Utah and I was 17, and my coach, Greg Marsden, had the team go and do a very short practice the day before a competition. So I'm there attending the short practice. It's in the Huntsman Center, seats over 15,000 people, I guess, because I was just there watching for the first time. They looked sloppy. They were not clean. They were falling off. They looked distracted. And so after about 15, 20 minutes, he goes, "That's enough. That's enough. Everybody off. We're going outside." Now, I was a club gymnast and coaches never just stopped you and made everybody go outside. And then we proceeded to sit down in an outdoor plaza area, just on the ground, on the cement by some trees and different things. And he started a team meeting, like a conversation. And he said, "All right, I know that there's a lot on your mind. There's a lot of stress. Here we are at this point in the season, right? We're going to take some time here for each one of you to share what's on your mind and get it out." He said, "I know that there's some people graduating early, so we're going to lose some team members. Some people maybe have some injuries. I want everybody to take a turn and get it off your chest." And to me, this was an excellent, now here I am later, decades later, this was an excellent opportunity to practice compassion for each other. Right? And when we practice compassion for each other, that's the beginning of learning self-compassion, right? Because it's much easier for us to be very kind to a friend who's struggling versus being kind to ourselves when we're struggling. We usually beat ourselves up. "What's wrong with me? Why can't I do that? I'm lazy. I'm slow. I'm the," right? So anyway, that was one of those kind of, you know, fairies and sparkly things floating in the air when they sat outside and they actually started sharing. "Well, you know, my uncle is sick and, you know, I feel like I need to go home." And somebody else talked about that, you know, they're retiring early. They're leaving the team and this is a real big transition in their life. They don't know what it's going to be like. And, you know, I just was sitting there listening and I just thought, this is really real. It's raw. It's so personal. And they trust each other to share it. And so to me, that was the connection that these kids need for each other, for it to be meaningful and for them to feel like they have a voice, right? And the coach was listening. The coach cared. So I had never experienced anything like that before. And that was a big teacher for me.
Yeah, I think what you're sharing there is really powerful. And I want to spend some time unpacking a little bit about just the team dynamic that was so important to you in creating those connections for you at Utah. You guys just weren't winning national championships. You were having something that was transformative to you beyond the mental performance stuff, you know? And that's such a cool experience. Just it comes back to that whole thing of feeling seen, feeling known. Feeling loved at the end of the day is what we right. want for athletes. It's one of those powerful things. We've had Dr. Bruce Perry on the podcast here before and his research, you know, and trauma and all that work and his book with Oprah, What Happened to You? I mean, he talks about it's more impactful then in most cases, and even therapy, because, you know, to have that connected community that people come in with, because you're having these constant drips of connection and yes. feeling seen, feeling known, feeling cared about, that it's just so, so healing and helpful for, you know, mental health and anxiety.
The team culture is everything. You know, I had mixed experience at at Utah, and I think that it's easy to just stay focused. For me personally, my personality, to just stay focused on all the good things, all the positive lessons that I learned.
You mentioned Greg Marston and just his impact, you know, on you and your experience. I've heard you talk about him on other podcasts. One thing that I heard you share was just that you felt he knew you and he wanted to know what feelings were going on underneath your performances. He wasn't just concerned with your performances. And I was kind of curious, what did he do that was special in kind of creating that connection for you as an athlete?
For years, I thought that what I experienced, everybody on my team experienced, but that's that's not true. What he did for me and what I saw, what I observed, and what I felt in my body, in every cell of my body, is that he loved the competitive spirit in us. That's what I felt. And so he knew different ways, like different things to say to us that got us riled up. Rawr, we want to go out there and get them, right? One time he came to us, I think it was the day before a meet with Arizona State. And back in the day, they were sort of our nemesis. And he was saying, girls, and he said it in this really soft voice. He says, now, I don't want to lead you to think that this is going to be, you know, easy. He says, you know what? They're really good. I don't know if we're going to win. And he said, we may not. So all of these days, hours, weeks, months of training, and we're, you know, we want to be national champions. And all of a sudden this one day he says, they're really good. I don't know if we're going to win. The collective energy that I felt again from my team was, what? What are you talking about? We're going to go out there and we're going to kill them. You know, like it was like a reverse psychology strategy or something like that. So I think that exemplifies just one way that I think that he knew us. Another thing that he did when I was competing, and it was a decision of what my first tumbling pass was going to be, whether I was going to do a double back, which was more difficult. And I wasn't as consistent on that as a double full. And we're literally in the national championships at the competition on the floor, thousands and thousands of people, TV cameras, everything. And I say, what tumbling pass should I do? Should I do the double back or should I do the double full? And because I warmed up both of them. And he goes, Mitchell, it's up to you. Because I said, well, I want to win. And he goes, you decide. He goes, you'll be fine. So that was an amazing, all of a sudden, I kind of felt both this, I don't know, tiger inside of me, like, I'm deciding, I'm going to do this. This is on me. And I also felt this freedom that he's not pressuring me, that he's not telling me what to do. And so I think he knew that I was a competitor. He knew my personality. He knew that I was going to go out there no matter what I chose, that I was going to hit it. And again, that was just an example of how he knew me, because I went out and I hit and we won. And yeah, really good lessons there.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You mentioned he knew you, he resonated with you. But it may not have been everyone's experience. I think back to my high school coach, and there are certain people that just he seemed to know and be able to connect with and motivate and drive. But it wasn't the case for me and a lot of other athletes on that team. And his methods were for some of us traumatizing and things that we've had to work through, even through our adult lives, just the effect. Your second book is Focused and Inspired, Keeping Athletes Safe in a Win at All Costs World. And that's why I'm kind of feeling like this is a good kind of segue into that. We have a responsibility as coaches, you know, obviously to not just be attuned to their mental health, but we have a responsibility for potentially the impact that we can have with our own behaviors. And I'm just kind of curious, when it comes to your experience and your work and even writing that book, you know, what are some of the big things that keep coming up for you that we have to address? Because there is a bit of a reckoning in youth sports out there today. You know, there is more awareness to the negative behaviors of coaches, but I still think there's a lot of stuff that's just overlooked and not given enough attention.
I couldn't agree with you more. This is kind of a personal mission for me, as well as kind of expanding my work and my business, making connections with other people, whether they're administrators in sports, whether they're people in the media, but especially in supporting and working with coaches. You know, this is a new era when you have the year of, it was 2021 with the Olympics, and earlier that year, in the spring, when Naomi Osaka removed herself from an international tennis, and was it the French Open? And she was saying for mental health reasons, because it was absolutely stressful for her to go to the press conferences, and then they find her. But she spoke up and she said that her mental health was so important. And I just thought, wow, what an amazing, amazing human being to be that brave and to speak up for yourself. And, you know, there was all kinds of negative talk in the social media and the press about her decision that she was, you know, being elitist, and that she gets paid thousands and thousands of dollars and hundreds and thousands of dollars, right? Millions of dollars. So that moment, and then again when Simone Biles made her decision and stepped away from the team competition, and in social media, people just, you know, just thrashed her for making that decision. And yet she stayed very strong in front of media and setting that example and saying, no, it wasn't safe for me to continue to compete. And for my mental health, I needed to stop and let my teammates take over. So this is a new era. I mean, I wrote the book Focused and Inspired just as the Larry Nassar case was unfolding in the media. And that January, I believe it was 2018, I was listening to the victim statements and I was watching all the YouTube recordings, and I was just in tears listening to these young women. And they were afraid, so afraid to go to the Karoli camp. They were so afraid to be alone and go on international trips to go and be examined by Larry Nassar, not knowing what he was going to do again. And so it's just this vulnerability that these athletes, they're in a place of having no power, whether it's a Naomi Osaka or Simone Biles or some other little boy or little girl that does not have the power. And so what we need to do is we need to be more in alignment with partnership with athletes instead of authority. And what I experienced as a student athlete, as in a club program, was total authority. My club coach, and I am so grateful for many things that he did for me, but he threatened me when I was going to leave the gym one day because he was pushing all of us so hard. It was completely overboard. I mean, if you ask any of my coaches, I was one of the hardest workers. And this was a day, I think I was 16 or 17, because I was driving, or maybe I wasn't driving yet, because I had to call my mom to come pick me up. But I was around that age, 16. And I could hear my other teammates, who were all younger than me, I was the oldest on the team, starting to cry, whimper. They were not able to continue. Our coach was yelling, you know, okay, we're going to do more, you know, and threatening. And this is not. And so I got up and I said, this isn't okay. This is too much. So even as a teenager, I was kind of a little bit of a rebel, but I stood up for my teammates and I stood up for myself. And I went to the locker room, got my bag, went over to the door, and he said, God damn it, Mitzel, if you leave, you're never coming back to here, this gym again, ever. And it was yelling at me across the gym. And I became stone. I became like a statue. I became frozen in a moment that I didn't know what to do. And I had nobody to help me in that moment, nobody to stand up for me or with me. And so I ended up staying, and I allowed it to happen. And yet I didn't know what to do. And so in this era right now, we're still doing this in some ways, on some different levels, different programs at the University of Utah, which I support, I love. I'm very sad right now that there's been an investigation and that there have been some student athletes that have been severely hurt. And I think that there's good reason to create big change, in education, and require coaches in their development to be more in tune, aware, and ready to apply tools for the reasons of mental health and wellness in sport at the highest level.
I want to ask just a quick follow-up to that from a little bit different angle. JP and I are both parents, and I've got a daughter that's 9 years old, and she's getting into softball and playing basketball. And I think there's an uncertainty as a sports parent, and I'm, you know, been coaching for a long time, but now I'm trying to figure out how do I navigate this from a different chair, in a sense, in her life. When somebody comes home, and maybe not in such an extreme case of being, you know, bullied or threatened or something like that, but kids come home and they're stressed from their sports experience because of their teammates or their coach or their failure or whatever it might be. What advice would you give to parents? Like, what's the supportive role of a parent when you have a dysregulated child that comes home? And of course, you know, my parenting instinct says I want to fix and comfort and make this right, but that's not necessarily always the role either. So what kind of guidance do you give to parents, sports parents in particular, when we see our kids going through those stresses?
Thank you. Yeah, I love working with the parents and doing parent seminars. I think parents are so excited about their kids doing sports and all different kinds of activities. They're excited about their kids developing and learning. They're excited about their kids achieving, right? Because in essence, we tend to feel like when our kids are learning and growing and achieving, that's when they're growing their most confidence, right? But that's not necessarily the case. It's kids learn to feel, like I talked about before, more in control and more confident when they can manage the struggles, okay? When they can manage their emotions. So way before they come home, it's about being proactive. What is my family culture? What's my family value? Is it just about achievement and figuring this out and rescuing my kids so that they can quickly get back? Or is my value and maybe my personal philosophy about how can I teach my kids, how can I role model to my children that we all have emotions, that we all have struggles, and what are the steps, what are the ways that we can practice getting calm so that we can get to a place of reflection, clear thinking, because when you come home and you're, you know, you're having a struggle, all right, so let's decompress, right? The last thing you want to do is say, what's happening? Okay. The first thing you want to do is say, what can I do for you? Right? How can I be here for you? Because like we talked about on a larger scale in coaching, is it's about relationship, connection with the athlete first before you start pushing them or coaching them. I know somebody who even says, don't push them, right? It's offering challenges. So here's a challenge for a family. Do you spend any quiet time together? This is one of the most important things that I start with when I work with parent and child, as I ask, I said, does your family have any quiet time together? And I'll say, and what that might look like is no screens. Okay. If you are doing some kind of a light chore, like folding socks together, that could be part of quiet time, but it might be like in the winter, having a fire in the fireplace, listening to music. If a family is walking out in nature together, if a family is quiet together in their backyard, watching the dog play, if their family, but it's easy downtime, it's quiet time. And so when your family does that, I recommend 20 to 30 minutes a week. and maybe that's not possible. Start with 10 minutes, right? Start with 10, set a timer. And when you teach your children that, you're actually teaching them how to feel safe. And when a child comes home from a practice and they're struggling and they're frustrated, or now they think the whole season is, you know, blown, they've totally blown it, they're not in the lineup, whatever it is, right? Let's come to a place of feeling peaceful. Let's do that first. And if you need to go to your room and listen to some music, and then you want to come back and talk to me. If you need something to eat, you know, let's get you something to eat. It's nurturing their spirit, so to speak, so that they have a place that they can go to inside. And then that's when you can actually connect and talk. And then you can be a source of wisdom, a source of light. You can offer them options, right? Or you can just listen. Right? Because sometimes they just need to vent and get it out and wait till the next day to think about options, you know?
I love that. That's even something I'm sure we could create space and quiet time with our team. I look forward to not having a 2-year-old and be able to find some peaceful time, because there's not a lot of quiet time with this 2-year-old. I'll just tell you that right now. I love that. I think at the core, you know, as coaches, we're always looking to see how can we challenge our players? How can we push them to the next level? Like, we often feel like that's our role. And I think there is, you know, the same as parents, you know, we have that role to challenge our kids to help, you know, push them towards some growth. But what you're talking about there is really just coming in there and having that support piece, you know, building that relationship. That's so so important. And when you have that, oftentimes you don't have to challenge as nearly as much as you think you do when you create that space and that connection.
Well, we develop kids to be on task. We develop kids. This is a common culture, is to figure it out, make it better, and shine instead of sit with it. You know, let's just feel what we're feeling. It's okay. It's okay to have these feelings. Because most of the time, what we find is that a team or an individual player at the highest level or at the middle level, right? That they didn't lose because they didn't have the talent, right? Usually teams and whether it's tennis players, basketball players, football players, gymnasts, it's not typical that they lost because they didn't have enough talent. It's typical that somebody wasn't either focused, they didn't feel ready, they were doubting themselves, they were distracted, they had something else going on in their mind. And so that affects the feeling in the body. I don't feel confident. I don't feel strong. I don't feel connected. I feel, you know, they're not in flow. And so it is teaching them that skill of just sitting with it and being with it and starting to recognize, how am I feeling? What are my thoughts? I tell the kids, you control three things in the present moment: your thoughts, your breath, and your body. And then they repeat it. I say, okay, now you say that. I control my thoughts, my breath, and my body. And then I say and add right now. I control my thoughts, my breath, and my body right now, right? And we yell it, we clap it, we dance it, you know. I control my thoughts, my breath, and my body right now, right? And we make it fun. We make it fun. And I tell you, the teens like it. The college kids like it. They want to feel like they've got this vibe, that they're in control, right? That they have the power. And it starts with quiet.
I love that. I wish our listeners could have seen that dance you were doing there. That was great.
I was chair dancing.
Chair dancing. There you go. So as we wrap it up here, you know, you have given us so much value and so much of your time. You've also got a lot of other tools, equipment, stuff out there through your business, Zen Tiger Mind. Could you share a little bit about what it is out, you know, that you're offering for coaches? Because I think there is so much of us, because I think so many of us are really just trying to be focused so often on our sport. We're trying to be on the cutting edge of the tactically, technically, how we teach things. And now, oh wait, we got to throw in the mental side. So yeah, what type of stuff do you offer coaches?
Thank you. I have been doing the mental training and coaching gymnastics, and I've been physically in the gym, you know, different locations across the country, even some international visits. And I can't be everywhere. You can't be everywhere. Physically, that's a challenge, right? I can only be in one place at one time. And I had a light bulb moment a few years back when I was at a gym, and I was doing clinics for gymnasts, seminars for coaches, and also for parents. I did different groups. And when I had the parents, they were talking about how their kids were so nervous for competition. Their kids just completely changed. They were great in practice, but then they'd get into competition and just fall apart, right? My kid doesn't have confidence. I had about 30 parents. And I had noticed on a wall about 20 feet away, 30 feet, that they had stuck some stapled pieces of paper. And it was, I just flipped through it, and it was scores. Scores are not about the process, about the child. It is about how we view them and how we judge them. Oh, they got a 9.5. Oh, they only got a 7, right? Where does it say on the wall, it's okay to make a mistake? Where does it say on the wall, I am patient when I'm in a struggle? Where does it say on the wall, I am strong inside and out? I said, because here, this is what gives them more stress, is the scores. They're thinking about the results. We need to get them in the present moment. So that's when I had this idea of my equipment for Zen Tiger Mind. And these are it's called the Mental Power Station. And it is 4 mini-sized yoga mats. So they're kind of squishy. And they have printed instructions and art, and each one has a theme and an animal on it. And some people think they look very youthful, like very, you know, childish, but the teenagers actually really like them. They just might pretend not to. But so I'll show you just for the sake of our conversation. This is Oz the Orca. And I don't know if the words backwards to you.
No, we can see them. They're good.
Yeah, it says conquer your nerves, fears, and mental blocks. And that gives you step by step. The first words are, feeling nervous and afraid is okay. It's normal and healthy. each day I can get calm and conquer my fear. That's the beginning. So you can have them on the wall. They have Velcro sticky strips that you can stick them to the wall, and you've got four mats: breathe and relax, positive self-talk, visualize, and conquer your nerves, fear, and mental blocks. And each of them have steps, and then the kids repeat it. So this is fantastic for coaches because now they have the language right there in the gym on the mats. They can pull them off the wall, go take them to anywhere that they are in the gym or in any sport, so that they're multifunctional. And there's eight different ways that you can use the mats. The kids can use them organically and in between turns, just go over and for 30 seconds, go through the breathe and relax exercise. It teaches them how to breathe and then notice. I breathe in, I feel the air go in. I breathe out, I feel the air go out. You can do it as a team talk at the end. How are you guys implementing the breathing? Do you feel like it's helping you relax? There's positive self-talk. So there's four different areas of mental skills that help them to be able to be in tune with themselves, to work through an emotion. I'm scared, I'm afraid, right? Slow down, take it one step at a time. So the Mental Power Station is my primary product, and a bunch of gyms, even some families have purchased it, and we sell them on the website, zentigermind.com/shop. I believe it's shop. I don't think it's store, but you can just go to zentigermind.com. And then I sell my books, the focused books. And we have some t-shirts, tanks, some different things. I believe in surrounding the athletes with messages, and whether it's wearables or books or the equipment, the coaches are just that I'm working with, the teams that have purchased it, just love the equipment. They love the steps. I am smart, kind, and helpful. I'm focused, the positive self-talk. These kids need to practice it, right? They need to create these neurons and synapses that it's familiar, it's easy to apply, and then it's right there in their mind to use it when they need it.
I'm going to be honest with you. I absolutely love that idea. I'm so glad you shared those tools with us, because when I think about what athletes need for growth, what I needed, you know, when I was a young teenage boy and I was triggered emotionally and I was losing my temper and I was getting into it with a teammate or I was talking back to my coach, I didn't need to be put on the line and run. It teaches all the wrong message. I needed one of those mats. I needed to develop the skills. And now I'm in my 30s, late 30s, and I'm trying to develop these skills for coping. And yet I never had these opportunities in the most important stages of my life, when my brain is forming and shaping.
Exactly.
It's just so powerful. I absolutely love those ideas. I like how it's simple. You can put them there. And so an athlete struggling, hey, you know, or part of your stations, part of your training. But I love the idea of just as a positive consequence. Hey, you know, they're struggling with their effort, their attitude, their focus, whatever. Hey, go pick one of the mats. What do you need for you as your reset here? Love that idea. We're going to put all the links to everything that, you know, that you've shared today, your Instagram, your all those social media handles. We'll put them in the details of this episode. This has been a great conversation. I'm hoping to meet you the next few months out there in West in California. That would be just phenomenal to get some sun out there. It'll be very rainy and dark here in Ireland where I'm at. So thanks so much for joining us, Lisa.
You're welcome. Thank you, JP. Thank you, Nate. It's been my pleasure. And I look forward to listening to you guys more. And any way that I can support your effort, I'm going to put out on my social media about the coaching culture. So thank you so much.
So my conversation with Lisa only further reinforces my belief that we have a responsibility to our athletes in creating a culture where they feel seen, known, and loved, and to making efforts to build a personal relationship with each and every athlete. as well as helping them to develop the skills and habits to be mentally strong and healthy, not just not being a problem with the blaming, shaming, and threatening coaching styles that is so common in coaching still to this day. So if you haven't already, be sure to check out Lisa's social, websites, books, and equipment. There's definitely something in all of that for every one of us as coaches that we can take and we can bring back to our team. Thank you for listening to the Coaching Culture Podcast. Please take 60 seconds to leave us a review, subscribe to this podcast, and share this episode with a friend if you found it valuable. This episode is brought to you by the Culture System Online Training Platform. It's the ultimate resource for coaches who want to become more transformational and build winning team cultures. Whether you're just starting out or looking to take your coaching to the next level, our one-of-a-kind online training platform is designed to help you learn the culture system framework at your own pace. Through this course, I'll share with you the proven methods, tools, and strategies used by some of the best teams and organizations in the world. You'll get access to customizable digital tools and a group chat to engage with experienced coaches and apply the four-part framework throughout your season. With the Culture System Online Training, you'll be inspired and transformed through the stories and lessons of real leaders who've successfully applied these methods and tools within their organizations. You'll gain a deeper commitment to transformational coaching and be equipped with the tools and strategies you need to build a great team culture. To get access to this course today, simply go to tocculture.com and click on the online course tab, or click on the link provided in the details of this episode. Don't miss this opportunity to become a more transformational coach and take your team to the next level with the Culture System Online Training Platform.